I had a dream last night, a recurring dream that I've had many times in my life. It may sound familiar to you. It's my ongoing conversation with God. You see, I have to have it time and time again. It's kind of the kick in the butt dream. You know what I mean? It usually revolves around not having the right clothes, the dishes aren't done, the house is a mess, the suitcase is lost, or someone's stolen it. This is one of my favorites. I can't find my electric curlers. You know how far back that goes, right? Or the showers are occupied and I don't have shampoo and cream rinse. Remember when we called it cream rinse? There's always something that I don't have that I need. I get on the wrong bus or take the wrong cab or the wrong train. I go farther than I want to, or I make a turn that takes me far from where I'm called to go, and I don't know how to get back, and I try to get back. And last night I had a dream that I took a cab and I went way beyond where I was going, but when I came back, it was just me and the cab driver, and she had a great sense of humor. They're dreams that I've had throughout my life, not always with a happy ending, that leave me feeling anxious and sad and angry because I'm not ready. I'm not ready. It's a dream that I had after I first went to Mexico with my church, and I met God there in and through what I call people made poor, and I came home really determined to change my life. But I was so frightened of what God might call me to do. I felt like God was asking me to leave my life of upper middle class, married to an alcoholic, struggling in a life that I really didn't think that I would be living and doing what God called me to do. But what would that call me to give up? I was frightened. I had the same dream later when I worked for Borderlinks, a binational organization that was such a passionate and powerful and wonderful job for me in many ways. Coming back to the desert and to the work that had been my life in Mexico. But it was also fraught with tension, lots of internal tensions and stuff that was really hard on me as the leader of that nonprofit. So by the time I left 5 years later, I was barely holding on by my fingernails. But I had a recurring dream throughout the last year of my time at Borderlinks that I wasn't ready, that I couldn't get my suitcase packed, that I had the top, but I didn't have the bottom, or I had the bottom and didn't have the top, or I'd lost my shoes, or I'd lost my cell phone, or my brain, or my Wi-Fi connection. And finally, a colleague in the executive director group of nonprofits at that time said to me, "Dell, I think you need to pack a bag and put it by your door." Really. And when I did that, I left. I knew that I could, that I had what I needed to go. But it wasn't an easy decision. And so last night when I went to bed and I had one of those nights when I thought, I don't have a thing to say tomorrow. I mean, I'd put a lot down on paper. I'd done my research. You know, I have this process, but it was a particularly hard one this Saturday. The text is really difficult. Jesus talking to the disciples about persecution and what's going to happen to them. And it's not a happy thing to invite you into. And how in the world was I going to talk about that? And I had a few things, but I went to bed and I was not ready to come here today. And therefore I had that dream. But it was beyond that. I wasn't ready to offer hospitality. I wasn't ready to lead the congregation in a time that might be divisive, if it's two or three or four people who don't agree with this, trying to hold them in church and be church together and move forward, trying to hold your anxieties about, will we have enough volunteers? Will there be enough money? What will happen? Will it be a family? Will it be an individual? All those little pieces that need to fit together. As your pastor, I'm not ready for that. Can't we just be church the way we've always been church? No, Jesus says, no. So when I woke up this morning, it began to dawn on me that my dream had something to do with my sermon, that surely the disciples weren't ready for what Jesus was asking them to do. It's just chapter 9 in the Gospel of Matthew, and he's already talking about they have to go out. They have to go out in twos. They can't take anything with them, not even a walking stick, not even sandals. And they're going like sheep among wolves. Now, I wish that Matthew would have written like chickens among hawks, because that makes a lot more sense to me. Because when a hawk flies over, my chickens get down on the ground like this, spread out, and if there were little chicks around them, all those chicks would get underneath him and peek out, and that hawk would come down and might get that chicken, might kill that chicken, but the babies would survive. I can identify with that. But sheep among wolves, it sounds like no chance at all, right? It's a scary story, and I'm not ready, but God calls us. So this is what I got from the text for today. The disciples weren't ready, but Jesus said, go. Take only yourself. You're enough. The power of vulnerability to knit people together is beyond anything you can take with you. You don't need all that stuff. Just get up and go. When it's time for you to make that change, when it's time for you to step out on God's good news, no matter what that is for you as individuals, for you as family, for you as church, for us as church, do it. And don't go with any pretense. Just go. Take who you are. If you've ever been to a 12-step program, you walk into a room, and I remember when I needed to go to a 12-step program because I was married to an alcoholic and my daughter was also going to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I thought, well, gosh, they're just a bunch of whiners. You go in, you know, and they talk about all these things, right? But the good news is you go in and they tell the truth about what's going on in their life. We don't do that very well as church, but they share their experience, strength, and hope. So there are people who've been working the program, and they have good news to talk about how they've changed, how they've been transformed through the process. Vulnerability. It was only when I was willing to drop my pretense, my need to come before you and share something shiny, it was only when I was able to get myself out of the way that God's good news moved through me and I was ready to speak to you this morning. That vulnerability, through that vulnerability, we're transformed and transforming. And this piece that Jesus said at the end, you will know what to say when the time comes. You will know what to say when the time comes. Show up, and no matter what, you will be given what you need when the time comes. You will have the word. You will have the action. You will know what to do. When I wake up on Sunday morning, every Sunday morning, I get handed something that I didn't have the night before. And on the way to church, I get handed something else. I know what to do and say when the time comes. This past week, as we looked around, we had the low-income, high-rise fire in London in which at least 30 people have died. When there had been complaints about the security fire protection burn down all those people who survived that, people who saw it. It breaks your heart, doesn't it? The shooting of the U.S. congressman. We remember Gabby Giffords being shot and the deaths here and the AIDS and the police in Alexandria, the terror of those people. It breaks your heart. The shooting at the UPS facility in San Francisco in which left 4 dead. The police officer acquitted of shooting an unarmed black man, another one. The explosion at a daycare center in China, killing 8, mostly children. It breaks your heart. Eugene Peterson, in his translation of the gospel story, says that Jesus' heart broke when he looked out and he saw the despair and struggle of the people around him. He didn't wait for them to come to him. They followed him, but first he went to them. He met them where they were. He didn't go to the synagogue, the big temple. He went to the meeting houses, which were the synagogues, the places where people came together to eat and meet and solve their problems, and yes, also pray and find their way with God. He went to the towns, the little towns, not the big cities. He went to where people were hurting, and it broke his heart. James Baldwin in 1963 wrote, "I'm terrified by the moral apathy, the death of the heart, which is happening in my country." Since 1963, the death of the heart has become a pandemic, gripping the world in the narrow gaze of a government and religious leaders who don't see or hear the tumultuous cries of the crowds of today. We numb down. We turn the TV off because we can't stand it, because our heart's been broken too many times, or because we're tired, or because we have our own internal wars, our own concerns of our people, people like us. Or maybe seeing and hearing makes us so uncomfortable because what we see and hear is so very different from the lives we live. For whatever reason, our hearts don't really break open so much anymore. You just can't get on the bus or go to the grocery store or go to work weeping. So we are numbed, and we read the newspaper or we hear the news, and in a few seconds that sense is gone. But our story tells us that compassionate action comes from a broken heart. And I think about the time I went to Mexico and had my heart broken open and saw the way that people were living, saw the way that our policies were affecting their lives in Mexico, and saw the way church was an agent for positive social change. I came home transformed. I really wanted to do something with my life. And I did, with the help of God. Since January, we've had 3 small mission trips, one across the street to the Methodist Church, to the Inn Project, where we met with women from Central America and Mexico who made the journey alone with their children because they had to, because someone in their family had been killed because of gang violence, because of extortion. And we saw how that church was moving to be in relationship with them, and many of our people also signed up to help with that mission. And then we went to Tucson, Keep Tucson Together with Margot Cowan, and we saw how 250, 300 people, families gathered, scared to death that they were going to be deported. People who'd been here 10, 20 years with children who were citizens. And her trying to give a word of comfort and some wisdom, but knowing that we were going to lose a lot of them, broke our hearts. We went to Nogales and crossed the border and met with the sisters at the Kino Border Initiative and met with women there who had come to Mexico, come through Mexico with their children, one with 3 children, who had braved incredible obstacles and made her way and was turned back from the U.S. and didn't have the money to go home. It broke our hearts. It broke our hearts. And I'm pleased to say that folks came back and were on fire with doing something. We have to do something. We have to break out of the norm of what we've been doing. Jesus's actions, Matthew's story, takes place in a time of persecution of the Christians, which were considered a cult in Judaism. There was an escalation of counterinsurgency warfare, attempts to eradicate the threat to imperial and temple rule that was posed by Christianity immediately following Jesus' death. There was Emperor Claudius from 41 to 54 that had Christians arrested because they were continually making disturbances at the instigation of Christ. There was Nero, who scapegoated Christians, blaming them for the burning of Rome, and it goes on and on. There were 54 emperors from 30 AD, the time of Jesus' death, to 311, and 12 of those persecuted Christians. The church was born in the midst of persecution because the gospel, the good news of Jesus Christ, is counterintuitive. It's counter, what's that other word I'm thinking of, current? It's against the current. It's threatening to the powers that be. I think about this word of being sent out as sheep among wolves and how frightening that is. Jesus says in the verses that are omitted in today's lectionary, take neither gold nor silver nor copper for your money belt, no traveling bag, no change of clothes, no sandals, no walking staff. That's my dream. For workers deserve their keep. Look for worthy people in whatever town or village you come to and stay with them until you leave. Don't be thinking about where's your cell phone or where's the Wi-Fi connect or what you're going to do down the road. Stay in that place with those people until you leave. As you enter a house, bless it. If the home is deserving, your peace will descend on it. If it isn't, your peace will return to you. If you're beating yourself against a wall and you realize that the God's good news isn't going anywhere, that there's no receptivity to it, no receptivity to opening a heart and changing a life, then get up and dust take the dust off your sandals and move on, and your peace will return to you. It calls for a willingness to be vulnerable and undefended. A reliance on the hospitality of others, and a willingness to journey outside our comfort zone. Brené Brown says, we cultivate love when we allow our most vulnerable and powerful selves to be deeply seen and deeply known, and when we honor the spiritual connection that grows from that offering with trust and respect and kindness and affection. Vulnerability is the birthplace of love, and belonging, and joy, and courage, and empathy, and creativity. It is the source of hope, and empathy, and accountability, and authenticity. If we want greater clarity in our purpose, or deeper and more meaningful spiritual lives, vulnerability is the path. And Jesus knew that, and shared that with his disciples, and shares it with us. How do we do that? Sometimes we have to go underground. In the times of Jesus and after that, the persecution of Christians, people couldn't put on Facebook what they were doing, right? Or tell the world or put it in an ad what they were doing, or they would be arrested. They would be deported. They would be killed. They had to be clever as serpents and innocent as doves. Jesus asked the disciples to do as he did, and we know what happened to him, so that's a daunting task. But there is deep and abiding joy in it. Connections are made slowly, and sometimes they grow underground. You cannot always tell by looking at what is happening. More than half of your tree is spread out in the soil under your feet. So penetrate quietly as the creeper that brings down the tree, spread like the squash plant that overruns the garden, gnaw in the dark and use the sun to make sugar, weave real connections, create real nodes, build real houses, live a life you can endure, and make a life that is loving. Keep tangling and interweaving and taking more in, a thicket and bramble wilderness to the outside, but to us is interconnected with rabbit runs and burrows and lairs. This is how we're going to live for a long time, but not always. There will be others to follow in our footsteps. This is the way that Jesus leads us. May it be so.